The Final Edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for people who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Hi, I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And I'm Tony Hendra, and this is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Tony, I must say that was an impressive showing at the Charlie Hebdo benefit the other night.
Oh, well, thank you.
I thought you and the other panelists made some good points and even humorously highlighted your disagreements in a way that served the purpose of honoring the spirit of everything
Right.
Why are you cutting me off? I'm giving you praise. I thought that your dissection of the historical role of satire and the absence of truly daring satire in the current American dialogue struck a nerve and highlighted
the... I said thanks.
Tony, what?
I don't want to talk about it.
What do you mean you don't want to talk about it? This is all you ever talk about. Satire is what you're all about. I mean, it's one of the key pillars of a healthy society. It's what we do on this show. This show, the Final Edition Radio Hour, this thankless, all-consuming 3 years' worth of unpaid sweat and tears only exists to further the dialogue and change minds. But what?
Yeah. About that. I don't want to talk about that. We're doing bits on Maroon 5, sharks, and that horny teenager who faked being an OBGYN.
Oh, we are? Well, I'm sure they,
Nope.
Then they must definitely have, Oh. Well, are they funny?
Oh, yeah. Exceptionally so. Very funny.
Oh, good. I hate all that preachy crap we do. Fuck satire.
Yeah, fuck satire. This is
the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Ladies and gentlemen, President Barack Obama will now deliver his 2015 State of the Union Address.
My fellow Americans, I come before you tonight with a series of proposals that I believe Americans need and support, and that will never, really, never get approved by Congress. Ever. First of all, America's young workforce needs to be trained. So I believe the first 2 years of community college should be free for all students who keep their grades up. It's a great idea, and I believe Congress will approve it, just as soon as U.S. Education Secretary Arne Duncan starts shitting moon rocks. Or how about raising taxes on the wealthy and cutting taxes on the middle class? Trickle-down economics never worked, and it's about time Congress admitted that and reversed that policy. And they will, right after I eat my own head. So, why didn't I propose this stuff 5 years ago? Well, because Congress wouldn't touch it then, just like Congress won't touch it now. So, why am I proposing it tonight? Well, that's simple. Fuck you. That's why. I am drunk. I am smoking pot again. Michelle and I are having sex in every room in the White House. I let Joe Biden put a trampoline in his office. I am just going to spend the next 2 years proposing the best ideas you've ever heard in your life. Then, when the Congress that you elected does absolutely nothing, I'm going to laugh in your stupid faces. Then I'm going to get in that big chair in the Oval Office and spin around like a kid till I throw up. I am so high right now. Anyhooty-hoo, I think I'm just going to take my shoes and socks off now, loosen my tie, maybe give John Boehner a little dance, see what he does. God bless you. God bless America. I don't believe in God. I never did. Fuck you.
My native North with thee, land of the noble free, my name, my Lord.
And now, a quick word from our sponsors.
Coming this spring on the Discovery Channel, Sharks Eat Things. Watch a bunch of sharks eat a bunch of things, while a bunch of things get eaten by a bunch of sharks. That's Sharks Eat Things, only on the Discovery Channel. We're not saying we're only obsessed with sharks, but we are mostly only obsessed with sharks.
The Final Edition presents Americans React to President Obama's State of the Union Address.
I didn't really watch the State of the Union. I watched HGTV, which showed the state of the Property Brothers. I learned a lot about the economy by watching these hot hunks of Beefcake, purchase and renovate Canadian fixer-uppers.
I watched the Food Network, which had Guy Fieri's Diners, Drives, and Minimum Wage Adjustments. Guy and his bright yellow head of hair travel the country sampling burgers, fries, and state governments which have indexed the minimum wage to inflation.
I saw the Bachelor's Rose Ceremony for estate tax planning. Some of those estate planners really know how to administer probate.
I saw a new series on Yahoo Screen called The Cast of Community uses meta humor and pop culture references to discuss Obama's community college proposal. Hashtag, I'm not Chevy Chase and you're not either.
I watch an old Ronald Reagan State of the Union on the new State of the Union cable channel. It was pretty much the same, although I think it was better in HD.
I didn't see Obama's speech. I just looked out the window to see if I could see the real State of the Union. Man, was it dark. It was so dark I thought I was looking into the hole where Mitch McConnell's soul would be. It was so dark I thought I was looking at someone from Girls having sex with someone from The Affair. It was so dark I thought Jim Morrison had joined the Smiths. It was so dark I could read by the Koch brothers' Dark Money. It was so dark that Springsteen's Darkness on the Edge of Town was now called the regular quality of the Edge of Town.
Join us next time for Americans React to Other Important Governmental Traditions That No One Actually Ever Sees.
And now the Republican response to the State of the Union address from the Republican Senator Jody Ernst of Iowa.
Good evening. I'm taking a moment from castrating pigs to speak to you, the American people. And I think you'd appreciate how much I love the American people if you only knew how much I love castrating pigs. However, I'm concerned with this president's obsession with global warming. Me, I'm no scientist, but I used to wear bread bags over my shoes, and I would sit on the bus with other children with bread bags over their shoes. You know, Benghazi.
If I could just interrupt, I'm Florida Representative Kurt Clausen with the Tea Party response to Obama's call for raising taxes on the rich. Me, I'm not an economist. I'm not an expert. I don't know what I'm talking about. And that's why you sent me to Washington, when you know I'd rather be back home in Florida, blinding raccoons.
If I can just interrupt, I'm Senator Rand Paul with my objection to Obama's call for national unity. Now, I'm not a senator, nor am I really a qualified doctor. I'd rather be back in Kentucky milking semen from a horse.
If I could just interrupt, I'm Senator Ted Cruz. I want to spit on a hooker.
That was the Republican response to the President's State of the Union address.
Now on E!, it's time for the chit-chat with special guest Martin Luther King.
Hiya, Martin. Welcome to the show. So tell us, how does it feel to have a holiday named after you?
Well, that's largely irrelevant compared to the ongoing struggle for civil rights in this country and all around the world.
Oh, come on. You got a holiday. That's really the dream, am I right?
Actually, the dream I had was a little different. You see, I had a dream.
Oh, that's so totes weird, because I had a dream one time, too.
Well, Christy, I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood.
Oh my God, my dream was about my brother too. He was buying this car that turned out to be made of donuts. Can you believe that?
Okay. Well, in my dream, down in Alabama, little black boys and girls will be able to join hands with little...
No way, because my dream was about hands, too. My brother was driving me to the mall to get a manicure, only I was late because the donut car was really slow.
Well, my dream was more of a vision, an ideal that we can all aspire to, a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the...
How did I not can't remember that before. My brother was blue in the dream because he was a Smurf. But I didn't want to, like, discriminate, so we both ate a Chobani. So that's totally, like, a metaphor for civil rights, right?
No! That's enough! I did not fight racism just so you could eat Chobani with a Smurf in your dream. That was not what I meant at all. It's been over 50 years, and still the violence continues. When will we truly hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal?
You really believe that all men are created equal?
Yes!
All men? Like, literally all men? Like, even Ryan Gosling?
Yes, even Ryan Gosling, whoever he is.
OMG, you don't know? Okay, seriously, just look at him. He is clearly way better than everybody else. I mean, just look, right, Martin? Like, those glistening pecs, right? Like, right?
Oh, well, he is a mighty attractive gentleman. Maybe he is more equal than the rest of us.
You know it. And that's all the time we have for Chit Chat with Martin. But stick around, because coming up is the nightly news with an E! Special investigative report. Rihanna's hair, fashion or faux? What you need to know.
Darren is an ex-cop who shot an unarmed black teenager. George is a neighborhood vigilante who also shot an unarmed black teenager. Together, they're detectives. This fall, look out for Darren Wilson and George Zimmerman in Law and Order, Blame the Victims Unit.
Detectives, thank God you're here. My ex-husband is stalking me and he says he's gonna kill me and himself.
That sounds like a mystery, all right. Let me ask you one question. Is your husband an unarmed black teenager?
Good call, Darren. That's just what I was going to ask.
Thanks, George.
What? No, my husband is a middle-aged white guy from Estonia, and he has a lot of guns. He collects them.
Well, the Constitution requires it.
Look, there's no mystery. He's right out there in the parking lot with a gun.
I just can't see the suspect.
He's right up the window. That's him.
Yeah, I see the white guy with a gun, but I don't see a suspect.
Let me ask you one question. Is your husband an unarmed black teenager?
I already asked that.
Oh, right.
Oh, my God, he's coming this way!
I'm just not seeing it.
Maybe the unarmed black teenager is hiding behind the angry white guy with a gun.
Yeah, unarmed black teens are tricky that way.
I love you, Carol!
Well, she's dead. And I guess the mystery died with her.
And this white guy with the gun is dead, too.
Huh? Oh, where'd he come from?
I guess we'll never solve the mystery of the unarmed black teenager.
The Final Edition Radio Hour will be right back.
And now, some more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Life is hard for 30-year-old Tommy Gilbert Jr. The handsome Princeton grad is the son of a wealthy hedge fund manager and recently had his allowance reduced by a whole $100. So on January 5th, 2015, Tommy entered his parents' Upper East Side apartment, told his mother to fetch him a soda and sandwich, and proceeded to shoot his elderly father in the head. Now Tommy has to worry that his 24-year-old sister, Claire, an aspiring writer with a book blog, will use this story to her professional advantage and become successful before him. Needless to say, there's nothing like a little family murder to make family dinner utterly awkward.
Mom, I just don't understand why you had to take $100 away from my allowance.
Because, Tommy, when you burn down your friend's house in the Hamptons, there are serious consequences for your actions.
Okay, first of all, that was like 3 months ago. The fact that I'm still getting punished for that is like practically child abuse. And secondly, that guy is not my friend. He's my rival.
Well, that rival's father happened to be in the middle of a merger with your father, so it was totally unacceptable.
Unacceptable? Mom, unacceptable is when I specifically ask you to get me a BLT before I pull my gun on Dad, and you return with a grilled cheese. That is like the definition of unacceptable.
Can I just say that I'm really pissed that you shot Dad and didn't even yell Allahu Akbar? I mean, seriously, who even murders anymore without saying Allahu Akbar?
Shut the fuck up, Claire, or I'll shoot you in the fucking head like I did Dad!
Mom, Tommy just threatened to shoot me in the head like he did with Dad.
Tommy, how many times have I told you to stop murdering your family?
Oh my God! I killed Dad once and all of a sudden, I'm the one who murders? This is so messed up.
You think that's messed up? I could have had a full-on book deal if you had just got a little more ISIS on his ass. Is that so much to ask for?
Oh, poor Claire. Everyone feels bad for Claire.
Children! Children!
Dad?
I'm not your dad. I am your dad's ghost.
What are you doing here?
I've come to tell you all that amidst all the chaos, we've lost all our money, and you will have to move to Murray Hill.
No!
No!
No! No! No!
Unacceptable.
That's even worse than my shithole in Chelsea.
But on the bright side, you will all have your 15 minutes of fame while Tommy serves 15 years in solitary. So, as they say in heaven, namaste.
Allahu Akbar.
I've given this a lot of thought, Tommy, and I've decided if you behave, I'll give you $200 of allowance.
I shot the wrong parent.
And now, another brief announcement from our sponsors.
Coming this spring on E! It's Celebrities Eat Things. Watch a bunch of celebrities eat a bunch of things, while a bunch of things get eaten by a bunch of celebrities. That's Celebrities Eat Things, only on E! We're not saying that the celebrities vomit up things later, but the celebrities vomit up the things later.
Now in entertainment news, Maroon 5 has been crashing real weddings as part of making their new video for their song, Sugar. Then this happened.
I just want to say that it is a privilege to be the best man at my first gay wedding. And I am so honored to be here today with Brian and Michael and
Stop! Please!
Hey, why are you stopping us? I'm Adam Levine, and we are Maroon 5.
Why are you here?
We thought it'd be cool to crash your wedding while we shoot our new video.
Well, it's not cool.
No.
We didn't ask for you. We don't want you here.
You interrupted my best man's speech. He has been preparing that very special speech for months.
And you just come in, think you can interrupt our most important event ever with your song?
We're Maroon 5. I'm on The Voice.
I don't care if you're a Real Housewife of New Jersey. You waltz in here and just start performing uninvited. What is the band we hired going to do?
Don't you like us, Maroon 5?
No, not really. I mean, you're okay. I prefer classic rock.
I don't like Maroon 5. I like early Gaga and some death metal.
Wow, this is awkward.
Nah, I told you we shouldn't do this, Adam.
Shut up.
Well, now you've destroyed everything.
Our wedding, ruined by Maroon 5.
Don't worry, everybody. I've come to save the wedding.
Liza!
Minnelli!
Don't worry, I'm not going to sing. I'm just going to throw a wedding cake at everyone.
That's more like it.
Wedding saved!
Hit Adam Levine first, Liza.
Maroon 5 tried to crash several more weddings, which ended in a beating from a bride who was a rabid fan of actual rock music.
The final edition asked the man on the street, what do you think of the potential 2016 Republican candidates for president?
I don't know what the debate's going to be about because we all know that Obama's going to suspend the Constitution and turn himself into dictator for life.
John McCain is my kind of guy!
Vote for Ted Cruz or Satan wins!
I think we should vote for Rand Paul and find out if he bought that hair in a store.
I would like it if they dug up Reagan.
I'm more of a moderate Republican. I'm voting for Mel Gibson.
Listen up, ISIS recruits.
I'm not here to waste your time. I certainly hope you're not here to waste mine. So I'm going to keep this short and steal from Ben Affleck.
Fuck that guy!
Matt Damon wannabe!
Daredevil sucks!
Settle down! I'm going to steal from his speech from the boiler room. If you become a jihadist with this organization, you will kill your first infidel within 3 days. Okay, I'm going to repeat that. You will kill an infidel within 3 days of your first day of joining ISIS. There is no question as to whether or not you'll become a mass murderer. The only question is how many times over.
Two? Three? A shitload? Two?
Do you think I'm joking? I am not joking. I am a murderer. It's a weird thing to hear, right? I'll tell you, it's a weird thing to say. I am a fucking murderer. And guess how old I am? 27. You know what that makes me here? A fucking senior citizen.
Old man, Grandpa.
My space.
This group is entirely compromised of people your age, not mine. Unlucky for me, I happen to be very fucking good at my job, or else I'd be out of one. And with 72 smoking hot virgins.
So smoking!
So hot! So gay!
You guys are the new blood. You are the future big swinging terrorist dicks of this organization. Now you all look bloodthirsty. And that's good!
Kill! Kill! Kill!
Blood! Blood! Blood!
Moira! Anybody who tells you that murder is the root of all evil hasn't fucking beheaded someone. They say murder can't buy happiness. Look at the fucking smile on my face. Ear to ear, baby. You want details? Fine. I have a rocket launcher. MK-153. I have a ridiculous tank on the southern border. I have every weapon you could possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I have Allah's backing.
God is great!
Death to the infidels! Shalom, bitches!
Okay! First 2 days of ISIS are as a trainee. You won't be killing many infidels yet. Maybe just throwing a homosexual off a roof or executing some teenagers for watching a soccer game. A word or two about being a trainee, friends, parents, the other terrorists, whoever. They're gonna give you shit about it! Pay them no mind. Once you're a soldier, none of that's gonna matter. Your friends are shit. You tell them you killed 25 infidels last month. They're not gonna fucking believe you. Fuck them. Fuck them. Parents don't like the life you lead. Fuck you, Mom and Dad.
Fuck you, Mom.
Fuck you, Dad. My brother's hot.
No, go home and think about it. Think about whether or not this is really for you. If you really want this, you call me on Monday and we'll talk. Just don't waste my fucking time. If you decide it isn't for you, listen, it's nothing to be embarrassed about. It's not for everyone. But we will kill you. Okay? That's it.
I actually like chasing it.
Here's how to help the Final Edition Radio Hour.
My dearest iTunes comments section, I have lately returned from listening to the Final Edition podcast and now give it 5 stars. But tell me, sweet iTunes, do you still remember our time in Venice?
Or you could do this.
Dear iTunes comments section, the Final Edition sucks. Everyone sucks. Also, I'm misspelling sucks.
If you rate our podcast or leave a comment, it helps raise our profile on iTunes. And if that sounds like we're begging for attention, it's because we literally are. We're also begging for money, but wouldn't it just be easier to pay the attention? The Final Edition Radio Hour. Review us on iTunes. Damn it.
S-U-X-S.
With luck, we'll be back with more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Welcome back. I'm Tony Hendra. I'm delighted now to be able to interview one of my favorite comedians and a very good friend, John Fugelsang.
Thank you, Tony. Very honored to be here. Thank you.
You and I have spoken a lot about
being a Catholic comedian. And I'm very interested in this because I think this is one of the most interesting of the unique things about you.
Well, it's a pleasure because you're someone who has written so eloquently and sensibly about the faith with full command of intellect and sentiment, which is something that I reach for. I consider myself Catholic the way that a lot of... it's my asexual orientation. I don't know if the Pope would consider me Catholic, and I'm sure most Catholics wouldn't consider me Catholic, but I do consider myself Catholic the way non-practicing Jews consider themselves culturally Jewish. And given the amount of emotional time I've given the Holy Roman Empire in my life, I feel qualified to talk about it all I want.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with that. I can't say that I agree with almost anything that the Church has been doing for a long time. But nonetheless, it's more than a cultural thing, though. It seems to me it's also a way of looking at the world which goes a little deeper than the average non-religious person does. Because you have kind of grappled at some point in your life as a Catholic with problems of good and evil and guilt and so forth.
Yeah.
And,
well, I don't kiss the ring. You know, I stopped kissing the ring a long time ago.
Yeah, me too. One of the things that always bothered me a little bit secretly, however vicious and, you know, nasty we got at the Lampoon, was whether I was actually hurting someone.
Yeah.
That charity as a virtue seems to be the first victim of a really committed comedian.
Charity as a virtue. I mean, well, I don't know. I'm actually a big fan of charity, and I think that if I had to defend the Catholic Church on anything, that would be the first area that would spring to mind. I think no one raises greater awareness of global poverty. I think when Pope Benedict, for all of his many flaws, came out and said that the nations of Earth have a responsibility to provide health care for their poorest citizens, regardless of their ability to pay, I thought, well, gee, that's actually Christian, not Christian.
Right.
And so, you know, I'll give him big knocks on the false piety. And, you know, I think Jesus laid it out pretty well in Matthew 6:5 of don't trust anybody praying in public. They just want to be seen. Which, you know, when you think about it, it's actually rather telling. Once I was in my teens when I really decoded that for myself. I was spending a lot of time down south and watching these televangelists just praying, mm-hmm. praying on TV with nothing between you and them but an 800 number for you to send your money, praying. And I thought, my God, you know, like, you talk about it and like, well, would you defecate on television? No. Well, why not? Well, it's personal. Well, what's more personal than talking to this God you believe in so deeply?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I developed a healthy distrust for that. And look, the Catholic Church has dug its own hole. I mean, married priests is the conservative point of view. You know, you get rid of all these sexual hang-ups, which don't come from Jesus. They come from parts of the Old Testament, and they come from Paul. Get that shit out of the way and allow married priests, allow women priests, get over the celibacy law, which was fully put into place in 1139 AD by Pope Innocent II, purely to keep priests from leaving wealth to children. So the church was greedy.
Right.
Not out of a sex hang-up, it was just money. You get rid of all of this, and you'll see these cretins interfering with altar boys disappear.
Right.
In the meantime, you know, I had Bill Donahue on my TV show last year, and I got him to admit that the church had a moral responsibility to pick up a phone and call a cop. And that's the great sin of the last two popes. In many ways, this current pope is sort of like when they elected former NBA superstar David Bing mayor of Detroit after Kwame left. It was like, well, here's the really nice guy that's going to be a beat change for us. You know, here's the positive face that will hopefully make you forget how corrupt and evil the last guy was.
Yeah. The thing about Francis, though, is that I have a nasty lurking suspicion that he's not actually going to move the rock very far.
See, I disagree. I think without even changing a single policy, he's already moved the rock pretty far.
Yes, but
doctrinally,
I mean,
he won't have a great legacy. But culturally,
yes. Well, culturally, I mean, he did very firmly say the door is closed on.
Yep.
On
he sucks on women.
Celibacy. Yeah.
Sucks on celibacy. Sucks on women. None of those things come from Jesus. You know, when you read the Bible, as I know you have, you see that wherever Jesus went, there were these three women that were always there.
And 12 guys.
12 guys, three women. But I mean, Mary and Martha, the sisters of Lazarus, and Mary Magdalene, who at no point in the Bible is described as a prostitute. And they're the first people Jesus appears to after he comes back from the dead. A thinking person would say, it appears that Jesus had 15 apostles. But the men, who wrote the Bible, said, "No, 12 apostles, 3 groupies." And you're right. For all of the good things about Francis, and I like him, and I want him to have a good food taster. I don't want him to fly in any small aircraft.
Right.
This is a guy who wouldn't let the Virgin Mary say Mass because of the ancient policy of no knob, no job.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, that's an embarrassment.
Yeah,
it's a good thing the nuns are there to redeem the entire church, because God knows the penises aren't doing it.
Yeah, I was one of the most interesting guests that you had on the, what was it called, Viewpoint?
Viewpoint.
Was just Simone Campbell, right, who is a great heroine of mine, I must say. She's especially the way she stood up to this visitation scandal that Benedict began.
That whole time was Benedict beating up on nuns. I mean, yes, they actually told nuns not to do yoga. They told nuns not to do Reiki healing. I mean, they told nuns to stop focusing on the shit Jesus talked about, like poverty and helping the sick, which Matthew 25 is just him laying out the whole deal.
Indeed.
And told them to focus more on the shit Jesus never mentioned, like abortion and gay people and birth control.
Right, right. Get back in the bedroom, in fact.
It's hard not to look on that as, on a cultural level, as just males controlling females' bodies, sexualities, and using guilt and shame to control behavior.
We actually have a character on the final edition called Sister Mary Che. And Sister Mary Che is one of the little sisters of Noam Chomsky, which have their headquarters in Wellesley, and obviously. But one of her favorite things is the church is divided. She's this lovely little old lady who's very sort of sharp and has 2 doctorates and stuff, you know, unlike Timothy Dolan. And one of her favorite things to say is that the church is divided into 2 classes of people: the hierarchy, Catholics with penises, and the lowerarchy, the ones who don't have penises.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And, the nuns are, to me, the nuns are where the church is at. I mean, it's
I grew up around a lot of nuns. You know, I didn't go to a Catholic school, so I never have had the privilege of being beaten by one. But but my mother was a nun. And my mother went into the convent right out of high school. She grew up in the mountains of Virginia, and that was her way out of poverty. That was her way out of the life that she was in. She was the granddaughter of a Prohibition bootlegger. And, her way out was the convent put her through nursing school, sent her to New York, then sent her to Africa. Eventually, she came back and married my dad, who had been a Franciscan brother. He had grown up around a lot of gang activity in Flatbush, and, you know, he had family members get in trouble, and he joined the brothers, and they put him, actually, they the first a priest offered to put him through St. Francis Prep, and then he became a brother, and that got him his master's, and he used religion as a way to get out of poverty.
Right.
You know, de Tocqueville talked about how religion was the origin of democracy, because before religion, throughout Europe, if you were born poor, you stayed poor your whole life. And religion was the first time ever culturally that a poor born person could somehow rise in status and eminence to the level of nobleman. So, you know, back in 1831, Tocqueville was giving religion credit for beginning upward mobility. So I grew up with and then both my parents quit. They made a vow to God that I would never happen, and they both quit. So I grew up with a really divided idea of religion, because due to religion, I'm not supposed to be here, but due to religion, I got to be here. So I accept all the contradiction, and I call out all the hypocrisy, but I like to shine a light on the positive aspects of it, because there are quite a few.
Yes.
You just don't see them on TV.
Right, right.
You see douchebags screaming at women outside clinics, and that passes for faith.
Right. I actually love that log line you have for your play. Was it a brother married a sister? And then later their child tweeted about it.
Yeah, NPR wrote that, but yes.
Okay.
A brother married a sister. That was rather lurid sounding, but it
especially
did,
for NPR.
Yes, it did yield a lot of clicks. I'm glad I could bring that. Yeah, I got the incest jokes and I got the black jokes. You know, my father's a brother, my mother's a sister, and I'm the whitest man in this room. But, you know, growing up, it was very normal to me. I was 6 years old, and my mom showed me my grandmother down south was showing me family photos from before I was born, and I noticed in a lot of them my mom was dressed very differently. And, I just came to really think that, well, there's normal people who go to Mass all the time and observe all the holy days, and then there's everyone else, the majority of people.
Right, right.
And it took me a long time to decolonize my brain and get away from, from growing up in the cult I was raised in.
Yeah. That's a wonderful story, I must say.
Well, it's got all the good and the bad, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the good things I got from Christianity and from Jesus was that, you know, you take the good and the bad in people, and I try to take the good and the bad in societies and religions And, you know, I don't want to be a fundamentalist just full of condemnation and fire and brimstone. I want to love people. I want to love the people that piss me off. And so that's something I carry from it. But at the same time, I think organized religion is an atheism factory in America.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the other things that I've noticed that you do too, but it was the sort of thing I had on some of my contemporaries in the comedy world, which is that you actually do know the Bible. I mean, you know the New Testament.
Well,
so it's that's the only way you can take on these religious lunatics.
Well, that was my thing. All my friends are atheists, and I respect all that. I believe in atheists. Some of the best Christians I know are atheists, and some of the most godless heathens I know are Christians. So you know, we all know that. But like, the only points of view we get in the media are atheism and douchebags screaming at women outside clinics. Sometimes that's how it feels. And when I was growing up, I had a lot of problems with religion, but I knew amazing people. My mom was a head nurse at a convent when I was a kid, a convent for her former order, mostly retired nuns. And I knew nuns who were like working with drug addicts and homeless runaways. And I knew amazing Southern conservative Christian people who were so charitable and kind. And I never saw them on TV. I saw Jerry Falwell.
Yeah.
I got to debate him on Bill Maher. In my late 20s, which was a big thrill. And,
oh, really? I didn't know
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was fantastic. And I got to call him Pro Some Life to his face because big death penalty fan, that one.
Yeah.
And I pointed out that Jesus never mentioned abortion. He was kind of specific about not murdering sinners. I was turned off to religion by what I saw on TV, but I was turned on to faith by the kindness I saw in my Christian, Muslim, Jewish, loved ones and friends and people I came into contact with. So I'm a big believer and respecter in personal faith and a big distruster of unauthorized fan clubs of God.
In other words, organized religion.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I must say the older I get, the less interested I am in any kind of religion that organizes itself. But I think that's less important than the fact that when you look out at the world, all religions are basically, all organized religions at least, are basically a conspiracy by men against women. And they're all oriented towards male superiority. And
Not all religious people are that.
No, exactly. But certainly that's the rule of Islam and the rule of.
But you can make the same arguments about academia, about business, about sports.
Sure.
You know, culturally, our whole society is the.
But religion's supposed to be different.
And I'd like to see religion lead the way. I mean, religion. You know, if it hadn't been for religion. We probably wouldn't have had so many people able to lie to themselves that slavery was okay for so many years. But if it hadn't been for religion, I think abolition would have come much, much later. If it hadn't been for religion, I think the civil rights advances would have come, you know, possibly decades later.
Right.
It's having the guy in the collar and that moral authority for all the shaky ground it's built on, having that on one's side for a progressive moral cause. I mean, we're watching the dominoes fall now with LGBT rights. There's nothing you can use in the Bible to say that being gay is wrong. Nothing. You're going to quote Leviticus to me? You're going to say that you follow the laws of Leviticus? Then you have to murder gay people with stones when you see them. You know, homophobes, I don't know if you noticed, the gay guys have been working out. They're ready for you. So take your best shot. I mean, no one follows Leviticus. Jesus never said a thing about gay people. Paul in Romans is not talking about gay people. Timothy in Corinthians is not talking about consensual gay people. Sodom and Gomorrah is a story about public gang rape of angels, not about Elton John getting to marry who he wants and talk about it. So, you know, once I broke through that wall of bullshit and realized that, you know, the Bible can be used as a means of spiritual uplift as much as it could be used as a means of cultural condemnation. And just as the Bible was used, you know, the sons of Ham to justify slavery, the Bible was used to uplift slaves and give them hope and inspiration. So, you know, I the Bible's like, it's like Occupy Wall Street or the Tea Party or the Constitution, you know, you'll look into it and you'll see what you want to see.
Yes, indeed. As a Catholic who actually believed in the Bible sufficiently to study it,
I was very devoted.
You then are armed against in the very way that these people do not want you to be.
Absolutely, because most of them are just ignorant hypocrite pigs.
Right.
I mean, most of them are just horrible bastard people, and you know they really are. And it's like everyone
scum, dirt,
once you've decided that you're on the side of God, you can't be wrong.
Right.
You know, and so if you've decided that you speak for God and that you and God are lined up on all the issues, that means anyone disagreeing with you speaks for Satan. And you are not going to sit down with Satan and negotiate school curriculum or what the terms of marriage are in your society.
Right.
Because that's just evil. Any kind of compromise is evil. This is the notion of, you know, American exceptionalism or manifest destiny, which are fancy bullshit ways of saying, whatever, I do what I want. And I, who was it? Was it that said, I'm not going to remember, it wasn't Susan B. Anthony. Who was it who said that, you know, they find religion suspicious because God so often hates the same people you do? And so, yeah, you know, and that's the kind of thing that all the religions warn us about. But I realize that you can't fight those people by saying you're wrong, because they want that. They want to run back to their little cliques, and they want to say those evil heathens out there threw their feces at me, but I'm here amongst you good people, and we are a strong community. And, you know, that kind of pride, well, that's how brown shirts get sold in some societies.
Yes.
And so, you know, for me, it's much more, I'd much rather sit there with one of these fundamentalists and actually say, let's assume every part of your book is literally true. Now tell me why my government, based on liberty and freedom, needs to discriminate against same-sex couples. And using your holy book, let's assume there's no separation of church and state.
Right.
Let's say we should have a government based on Christian values. Well, that means taking care of the poor, taking care of the sick, being kind to people in prison, and not starting any kind of violence.
And doing that first.
And doing that first. It also means no death penalty.
Right.
It means not strict adherence to Old Testament laws, because the Pharisees went after Jesus because his followers were working on the Sabbath.
Absolutely.
And he shot right back at them and said, Leviticus says you have to stone disobedient kids. Do you guys do that? Jesus called the Pharisees themselves out on their hypocritical, pious bullshit. Yes. The same book that today's modern Pharisees are using to put gays in a corner. So, you know, Jesus was anti-conservative religion from the very beginning. I just did an event with Reza Aslan, and, you know, he's getting a lot of mileage out of showing people what a politically powerful revolutionary force Jesus was. He didn't get executed by the state because he didn't rock the boat enough. You know,
right.
the guy was a radical, and he'd be rejected by religion today.
You can hear John weekdays on the new Sirius XM Insight channel. Give it a listen. Well worth your time. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
Look out! There's more Final Edition Radio Hour! A teenage boy in West Palm Beach, Florida, had evidently been posing as a doctor at a medical center's OBGYN offices for over a month before being found out. As this exclusive recording makes clear, people had plenty of reasons to be suspicious.
If you'll just wait in the examination room, Dr. Bailey will be with you in about 10 minutes.
Thank you very much.
Hi. Hey there. I'm a doctor.
Oh, they just said it would be 10 minutes. Hi, doctor.
Yeah, doctor, for total sure. You can tell by my coat.
I thought I was seeing Dr. Bailey.
Oh, Dr. Bailey had to do an emergency D-section.
Don't you mean C-section?
This one was really bad. So, what's going on?
I came in because I think I want to go back on the pill. I've been with my boyfriend for several months.
Whoa! Do you do it?
You mean, are we sexually active? Well, yeah, that's why...
Cool! Hey, like, what's it like?
You mean, are we using contraception now?
Yeah, that.
Well, we've been using condoms.
Oh, but... yeah. Me too. I carry one in my wallet. You know, just in case.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a real hassle.
For sure. Some places won't even sell them to you.
Right. What do you think is the best method of contraception?
My stepdad says you should totally abstain. But screw him, right?
Yeah. Say, what school did you say you went to?
Cloverdale South.
The high school?
Oh, they have a doctor school, too. It's in the cafeteria building. Hey, you know what would be totally cool? If I gave you, like, a breast exam, you know? Like, maybe just a little kind of...
A mammogram?
Just, like, where I see it, and maybe I get to touch it.
I see. Well, the American Cancer Society says that's totally cool every couple of years.
So I can touch it? Oh, wow, this is so great. What will I tell my friends? I mean, my colleagues.
Well, first you're gonna have to stop holding that clipboard in front of your, self.
Oh, I don't think I should do that right now. I just need a quick peek. Can you undo your bra? I'm no good at that.
You mean just undo the snap right here and...
Oh! Lady, I gotta go right now.
Doctor, don't you want to try for second base?
Not this time. Come back next week. And don't forget the floss.
And now, a final word from our sponsors.
Coming this spring to Bravo. Things eat things. Watch a bunch of things eat a bunch of things, while a bunch of things get eaten by a bunch of things. That's Things Eat Things, only on Bravo. We're not saying reality is a web of lies, but reality is a web of lies.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This week's meeting of the Association of Militant Atheists, or AMA, will now come to order. Clerk, please take attendance.
It's Christmas vacation, Tom. Nobody's here.
Fuck. Meeting adjourned until after the holidays. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This week's meeting of the Association of Militant Atheists, or AMA, will now come to order. Clerk, please take attendance.
Everybody's here, Tom.
Oh, yeah? Well, what about Jesus? How come he's never here, right? Yeah.
Always loved that one, Tom.
Did someone call my name?
Okay, first order of business on the agenda of militant in-your-face take-no-prisoners atheism. The picnic. We all set for Friday? Clerk, will there be nuts?
Yes, sir.
Okay, item deferred till next week. Next item on our militant agenda, litter removal. That's where we adopt Highway 10 outside of town and pick up trash. Anybody? Chair recognizes militant in-your-face atheist Steve Feldman. Steve?
I don't believe in littering.
What? No. What? You don't believe it? How can you not even believe in what? Point of order. Militant atheist member Barry Lank, do you wish to comment?
What do you mean you don't believe in littering? Litter's everywhere.
Yeah, we have proof. We've seen people throw crap out of their cars for years now. The evidence is overwhelming.
I know that. I just don't believe in littering. And I especially don't believe in the part where you pick it up. Especially me. Why do we, mainly I, have to pick it up?
Is that a deal breaker?
Yeah. One more suggestion like that and I'm out of here.
Clerk, please strike litter removal from our militant atheist agenda.
Stricken.
Next item. This one comes up every few weeks or so in one form or another. Mr. Lank, you want to run with it?
Yeah. Thank you, militant leader. The gist is... we buy a bunch of automatic weapons, you know, the slaughtering kind, gather together a few thousand of us who are really, really angry at people who don't believe in believing not to believe in anything. I mean, really angry, right? And then, you know, go into a place where there's a bunch of them and mow them down like a bunch of dumb apes in a hailstorm of our righteous bullets. Anybody?
I don't believe in guns.
What do you mean you don't believe in guns? Guns are everywhere.
Yeah, they're omnipresent.
And they run our world. They control everything.
I know that. I just don't believe in guns. Guns are messy. Who's going to pick up the bullet casings? Not me, that's for sure. You can bet on that and take it to the bank.
Is that a deal breaker?
You know it.
All right. Clerk?
Got it. Striking from our militant, in-your-face, take-no-prisoners, atheist agenda, going berserk with a gun.
Okay, what's the next action item?
Approving the guest speaker for next week.
Who is?
Andy Kindler.
Are you kidding me?
Okay, all right. So he's approved?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Pretty funny guy. Why not?
Then it's unanimous. Clerk, please see about obtaining the necessary drink tickets. This meeting is over.
Meeting adjourned. Next week, we'll take up the following techniques for getting our point across. Starting wars and raping altar boys. Hail no one.
Hail no one.
Ah!
Maverick Hunter, and I'm here to tell you about oil's biggest sale ever. Hold on to your hard hats, because our prices are plummeting like a drilling rig in Texas. Stock up on Brent Crude today, now only $52. Yeehaw! That's right. Brent Crude was $115, now just $52. That's one hot deal to warm up one cold winter. Just add matches. It's time to buy, buy, buy at our supersized sale, sale, sale. So slip in now for a deal, deal, deal. And if that ain't a fact, then God's a seagull covered in sludge. Clearance refined. Buy one, get one free. We're pumped, and so is oil. We got all the OPEC designer names you crave and prices that are burning up the competition. This glistening barrel of Venezuelan crude is now only $51.99. This barrel of Canadian crude's just $52 every week. And you can't go wrong with a hot little barrel of Iranian crude, half off at $51.55. Hotter than a lizard that's stuck to a rock covered in oil in a midday sun. It's the oil winter sale, so get your tail up with our craziest prices yet. We'll have your head spinning like a pneumatic reciprocating piston-driven hammer. Thank you, excessive fracking. Shale is down. 60 rigs of the U.S. are down. The oil market is tanking like a tanker full of rapidly devaluing oil. So take advantage of our early bird door buster bonus specials. Gasoline now only $2.47 a gallon. You're driving all the way to the bank. Literally. Clip out them coupons and a barrel of Russian Luck oil can be yours for only $25.99. Don't let that one slip away. It's the Oil January sale, so jump in the pipeline and
slide all the way to the deal of the decade.
Oil, everything must go.
The Final Edition Radio Hour is performed at one time or another by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Dan Vitale, Kevin Janis, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Link, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, Rachel Rauch, Steve Rosenfield, Rob Miller, David Eskridge, Andrew Danish, Leslie Shapira, Anne Tuchel, and Darby Worley. The show is written at one time or another by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Jeff Chrysler, David Eskridge, Barry Link, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, Leslie Shapira, Jeremy Rayburn, Kate Knowles, and Steve Rosenfield. The Final Edition is produced and directed by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler. West Coast production by Barry Link. Audio editing and production by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of The Final Edition, LLC. Copyright 2014.